All right, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Free For All. I'm your host, Big John. The first live episode of 2025. Happy New Year to everybody out there. Hope it's a happy and healthy year indeed for all of us. And tonight we're going to talk about a subject that has caught my interest. And I know for some people it might be a little bit too insider baseball when it comes to the operations of political machines, and especially the Libertarian Party and the Libertarian National Committee. But to help explain it all, we're going to dive into it a little bit with my guest here, and we're going to get into some of the explosive things that he's been able to discover along with his co-worker, cohort, fellow sleuth at Liberty Sentries on X. Liberty Sentries was going to join us tonight, but unfortunately had a commitment that popped up that he could not avoid. So we'll hopefully bring him on a future episode. All right. My guest today is Jake Porter. He's a former gubernatorial candidate in the great state of Iowa on the Libertarian Party ticket in 2018. And he's been involved in tracking down what might be considered, Jake, I hope I'm not using too strong a word here, shenanigans involving the LNC and the chair, Angela McArdle. So let's take a step back, Jake. So for people who may not be as familiar with the Libertarian Party, the LNC, and perhaps some of the schisms that have occurred, say, in the last 2 years, ever since Reno, let's back up a little bit. So there was this battle between I hate the terms, by the way, Jake, but left libertarians and right libertarians, to use broad stroke terms, right? In 2022, the Libertarian Party legally was taken over by what would a lot of folks would refer to as right libertarians. Libertarian nationalists is a term they use to describe themselves in a lot of cases. The Mises Caucus was up front in this takeover of the party. And they saw the Libertarian Party as having drifted too far into social issues, too far into what they considered leftist talking points and positions. So, of course, with that change in leadership, you had changes in policy. Now, having said that, Jake, there from the very start, there's been accusations that this faction really wasn't as much libertarian as it was perhaps conservative, as it was perhaps nationalist. And as typical for any gathering of libertarians, I would say, I would think you would agree with me, there was all these accusations of who's a real libertarian, who's not a real libertarian, right? So before I continue any further, Jake, do you have anything to say about that or add some color and context to what I just said?
Yeah, you know, and the party has drifted before, you know, in more pragmatic types versus more of the hardcore types, back and forth on that. You know, there was a big fight in the 80s. A lot of people compare this to.
Right.
It's quite a bit different, though. This here is different because ultimately the Mises faction this time has ended up working, I think you could say, with the Republican Party and Donald Trump, a nominee for the president. That did not happen in the 80s. No libertarian faction was working with the Reagan administration back then. So a little bit of difference today, but there was that fight that did occur a couple of years ago, and many of us did think the party was drifting too far to the left. There was probably a huge overreaction, though, that occurred when the Mises Caucus was over.
Yeah. So now, when we say it drifted too far to the right, what we're saying is that they were taking positions that for a lot of even middle-of-the-road libertarians, of which I consider myself one. I don't consider myself an anarchist. I don't consider myself a Republican who enjoys smoking pot on weekends. Like, I'm somewhere in the middle, maybe a minarchist, maybe a classical liberal. If you want to think of someone like Milton Friedman's my guy, not Ron Paul, for example, right? Like, Milton Friedman was the guy who got me interested in libertarianism. So I'm that middle-of-the-road guy. And at that point, I said, okay, what's going on here? Where's the drift? The drift seemed to be away from what you would say issues of individual liberty to issues of like communal liberty, right? Like, hey, all of a sudden this faction was saying, let's cut down on the immigration. Let's put up that border wall. you know, yes, we're anti-war, but at the same time, we're anti-alphabet agency and all that, which is, you know, that's more in line with what we were thinking. But then all of a sudden, this weird alliance with the Steve Bannons of the world and the Donald Trumps of the world, openly courting socialists like Robert Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Like, and I have to admit, as someone who is not a political animal, I enjoy talking on the show and everything. I've never wanted to run for office. God bless you for doing so in your state. This seemed very strange to me, like as a political strategy. Why are you courting all of your opponents? So to that extent now, you've got this infighting. It came to a head in the 2024 National Convention for the Libertarian Party, where a lot of people felt that the LNC, which is the Libertarian National Committee, which is headed by Angela McCardle, and let's face it, what is it, something like 80-90% of the LNC are McCardle loyalists. They're Mises Caucus folks who came in with the Reno reset. They had their man. Their man was Dave Smith initially, correct? Then he bowed out. For those that don't know, Dave Smith is a comedian, very popular podcaster, very popular. He goes on Piers Morgan all the time. He's always willing to debate someone. He was supposed to be the presidential candidate for the Libertarian Party. He backed out for personal reasons, family reasons, and the LNC was left scrambling. At the last minute, they came up with Dr. Michael Rechtenwald to be their proposed candidate. I've had Dr. Rechtenwald on my show, interviewed him, was very cordial to me. Since then, in my opinion, not the same guy I interviewed, in the sense that I think he's really let some of his opinions take him down the wrong path, my opinion. Opposing Rechtenwald at the convention were several candidates, including my co-host for 2025, Mike Termott on Liberty Lens. We had Chase Oliver, Joshua Smith, and, you know, various shades, starting from this, what I would call ultra-right libertarian position, all the way back to the, say, classical liberal position, where you might find like a Chase Oliver. Through backroom maneuvering, some people would say last-minute backstabbing, you know, the typical political drama, Jake, Chase Oliver was our candidate for the Libertarian Party, and at which point it appeared that the LNC and Angela McCardle was not happy with this. Do you agree with those statements?
Yeah, I was there at the national convention. I was a delegate, and I would definitely agree with those, because we had a split convention, you know. The presidential nomination went to Chase, and Angela McCardle remained on his chair. And so a very divided, right. Divided party.
Yeah, it's a divided party. But I have to say, Jake, unlike, say, Republicans or Democrats, when they had like a brokered convention, or, you know, it was a, you know, it wasn't Reagan in 76, you know, and it was Ford. But then it, you know, these parties coalesce around each other, right? Like, okay, we've had our little bit of a nice little time. We've thrown some fisticuffs at each other at our convention or whatnot. We've had our primaries. But now that we have our candidate, let's all rally the troops, and we're supporting our candidate. Yet the Libertarian Party, in perhaps predictable fashion this year, that did not happen. You had state affiliates who were closely aligned with the Mises Caucus and the Mises philosophy, not of the man Mises, not of Ludwig von Mises, but of the Mises Caucus, I'm saying, threatened and in some cases didn't want to put Chase on the state ballot. Particularly of interest was Colorado, who insisted, the state party there, insisted on putting RFK on its ballot. The LNC seemingly was in line with that, which led to another kerfuffle where the secretary of the LNC executed her duty, submitted Chase Oliver and Mike Termott ticket on behalf of the Libertarian Party to the Colorado Secretary of State. And that set off another firestorm because, hey, she did her job, but apparently she wasn't supposed to. And at that point, there were a lot of people saying, like, hey, what's going on here? Like, why are we actively supporting? Now, and I'll backtrack half a step, Jack. You said you were at the convention. Famously, at our convention, to the first time in my knowledge, a political party invited the candidate of its rival, the nominated candidate of its rival to its convention. Now, this supposedly was done under the guise of, hey, we'll get exposure. We'll get media exposure for this. And I have to tell you, Jake, I can't remember in the U.S. political history seeing a third party inviting a major party candidate to speak at its convention, at its nominating convention. It wasn't even like, say, when they invited these guys to the California state convention, right? At the national nominating convention, RFK Jr., right? Who, aside from his COVID stance, I think in any other description, we would have called him closer to a socialist than a libertarian. 99 out of 100 libertarians would have agreed with you on that. What was going on here, Jake, right? I think a lot of people immediately started saying, hey, there's something beyond, I want to take the party a little bit more to the right, or I want to take the party a little bit more to the left, right? It was more than that. At least that was my sense, and I've been screaming this for the last year at least. So having been there, having been involved in these internal politics to a large degree, can you explain to me what were the thoughts during the convention around this?
Well, at the convention, we were not told the full story by the chair. So later on, we find out that Angela McArdle had actually met with Donald Trump at Mar-a-Lago in November of 2023. So months before our convention, you know, 6-7 months before, and before that, she had a phone call with him about a month. And before that, it looks like somebody flew to meet her at some point that was close to the Trump campaign. So these talks with Trump had been going on for long before. Now, we already knew that she had met with RFK at Freedom Fest back in July or so of June or July of 2023. That was leaked out in the media. But this one here, we did not know she was meeting with Trump. Right before the convention, they put out this press release that I thought was kind of odd that says we're inviting, you know, President Biden and former President Trump to speak at our convention. Well, of course, it wasn't an invitation because later on, McArdle says that Trump asked to speak at our convention. Now, which is it? Did he ask to speak at the convention or did you invite him? It looks like he invited himself. And then, of course, there's all that and it goes back and forth with what was the agreement there to get him at the convention?
Right.
What actually agreed to?
Yeah, it was strange in the sense that you had them there. And of course, that like watching the live stream, watching that sort of MAGA army show up at the Libertarian Party and shockingly demand that they be given prime seating and that they, you know, shout down the Libertarian candidates. There was no debate. Supposedly, there was going to be a debate between our candidate and either Trump or RFK. Of course, the way the schedule was, which seemed asked backwards to me, was all this exposure took place before we had nominated our candidate. So at what point were you going to have a debate? At what point were you going to have our candidate rebut even statements made by the major party candidates that you had there? Before we continue, Jake, let me just bring up some comments here just to acknowledge folks out there. Hody Johns, our friend Hody, says, two legends talking. Well, I don't know if I'd count myself as a legend, but I'll count Jake as a legend. Thanks, Hody, for tuning in. Appreciate that. We also have Christopher Skelly, I believe, from my home state here in New York. The MC scrambled when Smith decided not to run. Absolutely. Yeah, that I think was the case. I don't think Rechtenwald was on McArdle's and the LNC's radar or Heiss's radar. Michael Heiss, who was the head of the Mises Caucus, for those that don't know. And really sort of like the, I don't know, Jake, would you call him at least the public face of the political strategy of the Mises Caucus to take over the party? Would you say that?
Absolutely. Without Michael Heiss, there was no Mises Caucus.
All right. So it's fair to give him credit where credit is due, even if I don't like the outcome, right? So, yeah, Christopher, you're absolutely right. They did have to scramble. And also we have Nicholas Sarwark, the chair prior to Angela McArdle of the Libertarian Party. And Mr. Sarwark says, thanks for covering the shocking corruption at the Libertarian National Committee and Angela McArdle's shenanigans. So I don't know if Nick pinched shenanigans off me or great minds think alike, Jake, but thanks for your comment, Nick. Thank you for that. And by the way, Nick, anytime you want to come on and state your piece, you're always welcome to come on Free For All, as is Angela McArdle, Michael Heiss, or anybody else. If they can, but they've blocked me, so I can't reach out to them. All right. So, Jake, back to our discussion here. So even at the convention, things seemed a little off kilter, right? And when I was interviewing people contemporarily to the leading up to the convention, during the convention, immediately after the convention, a lot of what I heard was, look, McArdle, Heiss and the gang, yeah, they're doing unconventional stuff, right? But they're shaking things up. Like, think of it as young blood, Big John. They're coming in, they're shaking things up, they're trying something new, they're frustrated at the status quo. Yeah, what is it? What's that line phrase? Mutatis mutandi. Things will have to change anyway, right? My problem with it was change, but it wasn't anything that would even seem to have the chance of success. And actually, we saw Hody's comment before. Hody and I had this debate. Like, at some point, you were left with two options, in my opinion: incompetence or corruption. It seemed to be that there was no other middle ground there, right? That you either were so incompetent to think that inviting Donald Trump and RFK was somehow going to boost the Libertarian Party profile, which it didn't, or there's some sort of corruption. Now, of course, you can claim corruption. You may say, in my opinion, there's corruption, but until you have proof, let's face it, there is no corruption, right? So what's interesting there is, we all started to get this feel, Jake, right? But then we get hit with another sort of slap in the face, which was, hey, this thing called, what is it, the RFK Joint Fundraising Committee.
Yes.
Now, when I spoke to Chase and Mike about this, literally the first words out of their mouth off camera to me was, we don't want to get involved with that. We don't want to talk about it. We don't want any part of it. We're not accepting any money from that. We don't want to have anything to do with that. Told me a lot, right? Because who's a politician who turns down money, right? You're never going to see that anywhere, right? So talk to me, if you will, about the joint fundraising efforts between the LNC and the RFK campaign.
Well, in joint fundraising committees, there are common. Libertarian parties used in the past. They allow the presidential nominee to add on state affiliates. It's almost like a multi-level marketing scheme, but it's legal. They allow them to add on state affiliates, and they can increase the fundraising cap. Makes sense. They have joint expenditures with the candidate. Makes sense for ballot access. What does not appear to be clear, if it's legal, is to do that with a candidate who's not a nominee of your party.
Right. Yes.
Where Colorado comes in. They wanted to put him on the Colorado ballot. I don't know what the real reasons why, but there was a definite effort to get him on the Colorado ballot. When Karen Ann Harless did not allow RFK on the ballot and put Chase Oliver on there, that's whenever she got retaliated against. But that may have been an effort because to make it look legal to get him on the Colorado ballot.
Right. And that, of course, led to even, listen, that's its own conundrum. I don't know how much I want to say because Karen Ann is a friend of the show. I've had her on. I'm a forthright, Jake. Initially, typical X / Twitter misunderstanding between me and Karen. Like, you know, not that we blocked each other, but it was sort of like, I don't want to talk to you, you know, and I don't want to talk to you, you know. But after talking to her, and I give her a lot of credit for saying, I'll talk to you, Big John, it turns out that we had more things in common than not in common. And I really saw it as, I don't want to use the word criminal, but wrong the way she was treated for doing her job, for literally doing her job and how she's been retaliated against. And it's fair to point out, an original Mises Caucus person. She's one of their own that they turned on. And she said, look, like it or not, he wasn't my candidate. He wasn't my pick. Chase and Mike won the nominations. They, you know, and then you have the bylaws, you know. Now, I don't know if the bylaws said state you can choose not to put anybody on the state ballot if you're an affiliate. But for sure, it says you can't put the candidate of another party on the ballot, right? So that in itself, you're right. Now it makes sense why you would have that huge battle over the Colorado ballot access, right? Because it kind of, in my opinion, it would backdoor the legitimacy of that joint fundraising effort, correct? Would you say that makes sense?
That would, you at least have a legal argument if it ever came up.
Right.
I think you would. Now, this work gets even more interesting. Karen Ann at one point goes back and says, I've heard that you contacted, this is to Angela, I heard you contacted the Colorado Secretary of State to remove Chase. And Angela says, no, basically that's a lie. Mm. It turns out that Karen Ann filed the FOIA request and got the email back asking the Colorado Secretary of State to remove the fraudulent electors. Now, you can't tell me the chair of the National Party cares what names are put on for a race that the Libertarian Party, I'm sorry, is not going to win Colorado. She does not care what electors are named on there. That was an effort to get Chase off the ballot. And it was a weasel way. That way she could maneuver out of it and claim, right. I never tried to put Chase off the ballot, but that's a laughable. That's laughable.
Right, right. And at this time also, you got more of the, hey, we're actually MAGAites. Statements from her. I heard from her, like, you know, thinking that, I don't know if she thought she was being slick or if she was being purposely sarcastic and thumbing her nose at the party, where she would say, in the states where we can give Biden a defeat, vote for Chase. In those states where we can't, like, vote for Trump, right? Or don't vote for Chase, however she phrased it. But that was the clear implication. And I remember saying, like, hey, I'm no Biden fan. I'm no Trump fan. But when did the Libertarian Party come into existence solely to defeat Biden or solely to defeat Harris? I never, you know, so this is very peculiar behavior. And it's not the behavior of someone who's just trying to be different to shake things up, to try to gain more, you know. So this always stuck in my craw, Jake, that the Libertarian Party has become the minor leagues for the Republican Party, especially the far right, like the folks that the Republican Party really doesn't want to be associated with all of a sudden seem to be coming into the Libertarian Party and pushing us back towards that Republican right. Let me take a quick break here to acknowledge some comments in the chat. Jeremiah Talks, who I've also interacted with on X. Jeremiah says, I talked to Rechtenwald and he said he felt used by the Mises caucus, said he felt they threw him out as soon as Trump was considered an option. Regrets his messaging during the campaign. Video coming soon. Jeremiah, of course, please let me know when that video is coming out. I will do my best to promote it here. Also, we have Rose. Rose says, it was first claimed that the presidential candidate would debate Trump, then that Ron Paul was going to debate him, then that maybe we'd at least be allowed to ask him some questions. So Rose clearly agreeing with you there, Jake, like nobody knew what was going on and it didn't make any sense from the start. And then she also adds, and yes, I talked to Rechtenwald at the LPNY Spring Convention and definitely got the vibe that he was being used and was in over his head. So I'll assume from that Rose is also a fellow New Yorker. So Rose, thank you for tuning into the show. Appreciate your comments. Jeremiah also has another comment. He said, I called out the Mises caucus endorsements before the 24 convention. And the only one not to lick Angela's boots and let's say fillet RFK and Trump since then has been Karen Ann Harlow's. The rest have been obsequious drones. And Jeremiah, I hate you for making me pronounce obsequious. So, but thank you for your comment. Anyway, there. Oh boy, the comments are coming in. Chris Skelly, Rechtenwald really went off the deep end after losing the nomination. Yeah, I agree with you. A lot of it did come off, did not make Dr. Rechtenwald look, sympathetic, except to a very, very small handful of certain ideological bents. So from X, we have a question from Keith Thompson at Keith for Liberty. He says, I can't stay on for long, but thank you both for your work to help the party. Well, Keith, thank you for for watching the show. And again, I haven't done anything. It's my guest here tonight, Jake Porter, who's done a lot of the light work. And I think Jake would acknowledge with working hand in hand with Liberty Sentries to gather this information and put together a paper trail. Okay, Jake. So for everyone so far, we've kind of laid the ground round. And again, speed round version of what's been leading up to the work you've been trying to sort of run down here. So now the question is, the joint fundraising committee. One of the things that I think neither one's mentioned is that, yes, it's used to get around campaign donation limits, right? So it lets you go above the $6,600, I think, that any one individual. And like you said, it's been traditionally used within the same party, right? So you kind of put local affiliates, states affiliates, together, and they kind of pool their money together and able to distribute money in greater sums and move it around. One of the things that I think we didn't mention is that this was a 90-10 split, that in this GAFC, 90% was going to RFK, 10% was staying with the LNC. And again, an old New Yorker born and bred from the Bronx, this sounds like almost like one of those construction kickback schemes, right? Like, hey, we're going to use you to collect the money. You're not going to have anything to do with it. And for your trouble, we'll kick you back 10%. That's what it sounds like, right? And I think that's why Chase and Mike didn't want to have any part of it. You know, in addition to the illegality of it, it's kind of nuts. Like, why are we helping RFK? Interestingly enough, the money that was raised through this, the 90% that was funneled back to the RFK campaign, interestingly, ended up in Donald Trump's pocket when RFK merged his campaign with the Trump campaign, basically. MAHA, MAGA, whatever they're calling themselves, right? So, in essence, LNC decided to fundraise for Trump. That was the practical effect of this. It's the practical effect of this sort of arrangement, right? Is that the point where you said something's fishy here and I need to do something about it?
Well, I started looking at the FEC reports. I thought something's not adding up quite right, and I just want to look. And sure enough, that's whenever I start to find just looking for little things that don't make quite sense. One of the things also that the chair did, that was the first thing that I found, was she had created this Rescue the West, incorporated this nonprofit with a couple other people, and it was designed to hold this big Trump rally, this Rescue the West rally. Well, then we find out that $25,000 goes to this Rescue the West from the Joint Fundraising Committee. It's donated in there. Well, that seems pretty odd. There's no conflict of interest disclosed with the Libertarian National Committee, just like there was no conflict of interest disclosed that she was going to meet with Donald Trump. She did not tell the board about that until they found out, six, seven months later. That stuff all stays hidden. And it's this way here. It's not disclosed. It just ends up on some FEC report. So you have to really be looking to catch it. And then we also look at the Rescue the West. There's all these Kennedy-based organizations. There's Kennedy PACs, several of them. And they're all donating over $700,000 combined to this Rescue the West rally.
Right.
Now, the Rescue the West rally does not have to file FEC reports. They will at some point theoretically have to file with the IRS. And then at that point, we can see the donors and where all the expenses come out. But right now, we can't see that. And so there's no telling what has happened with that money. And, of course, the logical question is, did Angela profit off this personally? Still irrelevant to the fact that her organization has personally benefited from her lobbying the committee on this joint fundraising committee. She's benefited, and she did not disclose it.
Yeah. And you know what's interesting? Until I just heard you speaking, Jake, it never occurred to me that – see, I thought Rescue the West – naive, like I said, I may have gray hairs, but I'm really almost like too naive to be this age. Rescue the West, when I read the papers, it never occurred to me. I thought it meant Rescue the West as in the Western region of the country. It just dawned on me, Rescue the West is more of that white nationalist crap that's like, hey, we need to save Western civilization. It's the type of stuff you hear from, the far right wingers or the alt right, whatever term you wish to carry. Those are the folks we're talking about. So it just registered to me as I heard you speak, duh, that's the Rescue the West they're talking about. So yes, you're absolutely right. That even if the organization benefited and not McArdle personally, there's still a conflict of interest there because she's using the Libertarian Party to what? To hawk for just about everybody but the Libertarian Party, correct?
Yeah, and I think, you know, they tried to say, well, you know, Chase Oliver was invited, whether he was or not is irrelevant. Why would he show up to a Donald Trump rally? You know, that would be dumb on his part. So whether he was invited or not, it's irrelevant.
Right. You know, yeah, and he said as much when he was on our show. He said, yeah, I'm not going anywhere where I'm just going to debate whether or not, you know, like I'm a pedophile or not. Like, why would I show up to that, right? Because, of course, again, not just being lukewarm support towards Chase, like almost actively undermining him, you know, constantly having her and her minions refer to pedophilia and all these baseless allegations that, you know, that he was a COVID supporter and, you know, that he was a mandate supporter and all these like really crazy, crazy allegations that were made against him and against Termott as well, as far as I could tell. But it was really focused on Chase because he was, I think, the easier target being the presidential nominee. All right. So, and again, let me just bring up some more comments. William from Facebook says, it would seem to me that the Mises Caucus side of the party, especially leadership, were likely okay with their money raised for RFK Jr. to go to Trump, as they wanted Trump to win. Obviously, they preferred Trump to Chase, I think is what William is trying to say. Yeah, William, I think, you know, I don't want to speak for Jake, but yeah, obviously, I think that's the case, right? That clearly McArdle and Heiss and the LNC preferred Trump. And if they couldn't have Trump, they wanted RFK. They wanted anybody but who eventually became our candidate, which was Chase Oliver. Now, let me ask you this. Coming out of the convention, how is it, do you think, that Chase Oliver was able to grab the nomination? Again, backroom politics, a lot of backroom, smoky room dealings there, Jake. But it is strange to me that even though McArdle lost a little bit of support, I think she became chair, but with a smaller margin than she had in 2022. Was it the fact that everybody was hyped for Dave Smith to be their candidate on the Mises side? And when he, even though it was known for a while that he wasn't going to run, do you think that left them sort of rudderless? Or do you think there were enough non-Mises delegates that said, hey, this is getting too weird even for us? Because, like, unfortunately for the LNC, there was a lot of those conversations on the floor that were caught on a hot mic. And some of the things that were said, particularly against Chase, were particularly atrocious, you know, and really have no part of the Libertarian Party. So how do you think it was that this coalition between Termott's delegates and Chase's delegates were able to come together to take away that part of the plan from the LNC?
Well, I've got to be honest. I think Reichenwald was an extremely weak candidate. They picked somebody who, no fault of his own, had never run for office before, had never been in those debates, didn't really know the Libertarian Party that well. And it's a whole different animal to go out there and try to, you know, campaign. You know, I've ran in a primary before, and I've managed, you know, campaigns at the presidential level. It's a whole different ballgame to actually try to win those 1,000 or so delegates than it is to even campaign in a primary or to campaign anywhere else.
Right.
You've got to really know the party, and you've got to, with no Libertarian philosophy, and I didn't think that he did. He seemed like the strangest anarchist that I'd ever seen. He was talking about anarchy, and then at the same time having border controls based on town. You'd have sundown towns, and they thought really weird stuff. I think that was a little bit too weird for even some of the delegates and some of the people that had thought, oh, this is a hardcore, that he just wasn't. And so I think they split away.
Yeah, it was a little strange. Okay, one quick comment here. From Jocelyn Jeffries Fry, LNC members have been and still are inexcusably ugly to Chase Oliver. Absolutely, Jocelyn. I agree with you. I think he did not deserve a lot of this hatred that they got to him. It went beyond mere politics. It was personal, in my opinion. from X. This question is for Jake. What are your thoughts on Dave Smith and the direction the party is going? Will McArdle hold on to power long term? And if not, who on the classical side is there to step up, or does the Mises caucus keep control of the party for the next few election cycles?
You know, I think Dave Smith is, what's the title of this program? Part of the problem. I think he's been part of the problem. Mm. When we've had candidates, a candidate tries to run against Ron DeSantis, Dave Smith tells him not to. Didn't want candidates to run, I think, against either Governor Reynolds or Kristi Noem in Iowa or South Dakota, whichever won. And then also in Texas, didn't want to run against Abbott. Blake Masters running in Arizona. Dave Smith's one of the people that convinces our candidate to drop out of the race and endorse the Republican. And yeah. He did the same thing here. He ultimately endorsed Donald Trump. You know, there's never going to be a Republican that's too bad for him when it comes to that level. I don't know if he's ever voted libertarian. He has wrong views on immigration to the point that, I mean, he said put the entire military at the border, a little bit right. More explicit than that. And no, I think it's been a disaster. He was one of these people that claimed to be a real hardcore anarchist, and I just failed to see where the anarchy is.
Yeah, exactly.
Than any classical liberal I ever know.
Yeah, it is funny because, like, if you listen to him talk on the surface, you're like, guy knows his stuff. He can quote people. He's got a wealth of knowledge that he's accumulated. You could tell he's a voracious reader. You could tell this about him. And then he comes across with these positions, and then he doesn't want to hear it. You know, like, hey, how's it going with Trump since you guys all simped for him? You know, it's like, oh, yeah, well, I never liked him. Here's a tweet from 5 years ago where I said I hated something he did. You know, there's always a backtrack, but I find that interesting. Okay, from
the second part of that question, I don't want to forget that. Was the Mises caucus going to stay in power for the next couple of elections?
Yeah.
Sadly, if that happened, I don't think there will be a Libertarian Party. The party, since 2022, has lost about half their members. They've gone from about 21,000 to 10,000 members, it looks like. Half the funding, $2 million down to $1 million. They don't even use their office headquarters anymore. They're down to almost no staff, fewest candidates since 1994. I don't think there will be a party much longer. I think we'll be in the shape of the Constitution Party if this continues on.
Right. And honestly, from what I've been hearing from certain former officers and folks currently, who like yourself are combing through records and books and whatnot, the Libertarian Party is broke. They have more debt than they have more liabilities than income right now. And it's not, we had Nicholas Sarwar comment here. There's a lot of people who are naysayers of Nick, but I will say one thing. The party was never insolvent under him, and they weren't necessarily cutting deals to have opposing candidates show up at the nominating convention under his watch. Oh, so
that was one of the reasons they gave for the joint fundraising committee. There was an LNC rep that said that we have to do it because we are broke.
We're broke. Yeah. Where did the money go?
So it's probably kept cash flow coming in, as a business.
Yeah.
If cash flow comes in, you can survive for quite a while. What happens when that cash flow goes? And we don't really know the state of the finances either.
Yeah. Supposedly that's another one. And maybe one day I can coax Todd Hagopian to come in and explain it for me, for the audience rather. Okay. Jeremy Harding, Jacob Hornberger nailed it when he said that if they wanted someone saying what Rechtenwald was saying, they'd go with Trump because they have no reason not to. He has more support and is more likely to win. And he had stronger positions on borders, wokes, etc., and his own actual branding. Mikey literally identified with that branding. He called himself the deplorable professor for years. Why go with the guy who is taking the brand, with the guy taking the brand and not the guy holding it? Correct. Why wouldn't you? Like I've always said, why not just go be a Republican if that's the thing? Why come to the Libertarian Party to vote Republican? This has almost like a feel of a coordinated, and I hate this phrase because everybody uses it for everything, PSYOP. And again, I will flagellate myself later for having used that phrase in a serious conversation, Jake. But there does seem to be some of these indications that this was planned all along. Like, it was never about libertarianism. It was about Donald Trump being upset that in swing states in 2020, the spread between Biden and himself was the libertarian vote. And he tweeted about it, and his acolytes tweeted about it, and they were still upset over that. Do you think that played into I don't want to get into it, but do you think there was any sort of coordination with certain Republican elements to get the Mises Caucus in power to do what they eventually ended up doing, supporting Trump?
Yeah, I don't think it started. I don't think the Mises Caucus started out with that intent. Now, later on, could something like that have happened? Well, I'm sure that Donald Trump's people were very upset. The only reason that the Libertarian Party and Joe Jorgensen didn't get the Ralph Nader treatment of 2000 was because of Donald Trump claiming that he won the election over and over and over again.
Right, right.
And one time say, well, you cost us the election. I said, are you calling Donald Trump a liar? So they couldn't make that argument that we cost him the election because of his claims that he actually won the election. But deep down, they knew it.
Yeah. And so
it scared a lot of Republicans out there that would have definitely wanted to do this.
Yeah, yeah. From Angela TC. At this point, it's pretty clear McCardle's LNC was more interested in money and power than principal positions. There was also quite a few directors when Heiss announced Dreck as a candidate. There was also quite a few defectors when Heiss announced Dreck as the candidate with no input from the Mises membership. And yeah, when I was speaking with Karen Ann, she voiced sort of the same thing. Like, this party, meaning this caucus, the Mises caucus, is not what a lot of us started out believing in. It has evolved or has morphed into something that we don't recognize anymore. Right? Now, were you ever involved with the Mises caucus, Jake? I never bothered to ask you.
So I've been a libertarian since about 2004.
Right.
Michael Badnarik, I was not even old enough to vote. I was 16, but Michael Badnarik is the first candidate I supported. I have not been involved in the Mises caucus. I had several friends that were. I was Jacob Hornberger's campaign manager in 2020. Helped him out this time as treasurer and just right. Giving advice. But so I've worked with the Mises caucus, many members of it, but I was never a member of the Mises caucus. Now, that's a good point, though. In 2020, Hornberger, as well as several candidates, went through a process. They interviewed, they discussed things, and the caucus chose him to be the one they wanted to go with, which is pretty interesting considering the direction they went, 4 years later.
Right.
Jacob Hornberger is a much different candidate than Michael Rechtenwald, a very, very different direction. But this time around, there was no input. From what I could tell, it was always that pretty much as far as I gather that Michael Heiss made the decision. This is who we're going to support. We're going to support him. And they fell in line, but probably not enough of them to get him the nomination.
Right. And let's face it, Rechtenwald's performance at the convention didn't help him either. When he showed up in no condition to answer questions, the press that did show up, and that's where Chase and Mike Dermott jumped into the breach, right? They helped themselves with being able to step into that breach. Nick, we mentioned Nick, and he has to throw in. He goes, when he was in charge, we got Republicans to become libertarians, not vice versa. Okay, Nick, that's a good point. And then Rose says here, kind of echoing what you said there, Jake, ex-Mises here. The leadership has alienated so many people who up until recently had been loyal supporters. At this point, they're scrambling to recruit RFK supporters to make up for the losses. And that's a good point, right? Like, now you've got to pretend that RFK is the libertarian that was promised, right? Because to follow up on the LNC's promises that, hey, I'm a kingmaker. I have Trump's phone number on my cell phone. And I convinced him to to nominate a libertarian for his cabinet. Well, that evolved into, well, I convinced him to put a member of the Libertarian Party in his cabinet. Oh, and by the way, RFK just cut me a check for a lifetime membership. So he's technically a member of the Libertarian Party for life now.
This is all interesting. We don't even know what the original agreement was, because I'm
going
to deal with McCardle saying to reporters that his agreement was that he was going to show up at the convention and address our grievances. I don't recall him addressing any grievances. I also didn't go to the event. But that was the first thing we're told. And then it's, oh, he's going to pardon Ross. And then we find out that Thomas Massie got that promised in 2022. So Angela didn't do it. And then Angela claims he had the paperwork and was going to do it in 2020. But he didn't right before he left office. So she didn't get that promise from him either.
Right.
And then the Libertarian in the cabinet, Trump did say that, but that didn't happen. And she's even told us prior that it wasn't going to be RFK. So
Well, she's now grasping at straws to make her strategy, if it's, and I'm being generous by calling it a strategy, having it successful by claiming that RFK is the libertarian that was promised, when in fact, when he gets up there and says, you know, hey, it's a pretty good chance I'm going to ban you from having soda and corn syrup. And, you know, it's Michael Bloomberg, as far as I'm concerned. I'm a New Yorker. Michael Bloomberg had the same thing. I couldn't have two big gulps at my table because of Michael Bloomberg, because he knew what was best for me. That's RFK. And by the way, that's not libertarian. It's not promoting individual choice when you tell me I can't have corn syrup, any more than it is that you're forcing me to take a vaccine, right? So it's the same type of tyranny, but just from one from the left, one from the right. Grindhouse says, the Mises Caucus was always headed this way and was founded on the leadership's drive to monetize their participation in the party, and as we see that they have done. So now, following up on Grindhouse's point there, Jake, you did... Like, I don't know, did this become sort of like you had a divine inspiration? Did you have a nightmare one day? Did you just get a bug up your butt where you said, I got to find out where all this, why is all this happening? Is someone making out on the side? Is someone getting a kickback? What put you on this sort of quest for the Holy Grail, so to speak?
So in 2021, I was in Iowa. I live in Arkansas now, but I was in Iowa. I was asked to join the Libertarian Party of Iowa as an alternate to the board. Didn't really have any power, but I thought I wanted to look over the financials. I wanted to do my due diligence as a board member and join some of the meetings. The chair, who I had supported and actually nominated for chair, did not let me in the meetings. There was some things that meetings were always changing times, really weird stuff. They were online at the time. And then some financials don't get reported to the state. And I start to ask questions. And the first thing people do is they push back. Oh, you're just infighting, right?
Right.
And it turns out that the money was embezzled. The money was stolen by the chair. So I had a professor in college say, when something doesn't seem right, you know, think dirty, you'll figure it out. And that's usually what happens. When something doesn't seem right, when something doesn't add up, You owe it to the members, the delegates, to the party, and to the nominees that we've had to look into this stuff. We've been here for years. I've got to meet the party founder, David Nolan, at one point. It's something that I felt it was my duty to actually look into these things. Now, what happens and what people do with the information, that's up to them, but we have to at least look into it. And the best thing we could find out is that everything's there. Everything's fine. Or we can also find out that stuff has been lied about, covered up, and not properly reported. And that's what we found.
So expand on that a little bit. What did you find?
So in this case here with the this time, Libertarian Party, yes. So the other stuff. Well, another thing that I found that was pretty interesting was this swing vote strategist, LLC, happened to notice that a payment went to a very similar address to Angela McCardle's pack.
We'll get to okay, so let me together. Let me just pause you there, because like I said, I'm not too bright of a guy. You're going to have to explain things to me.
Sorry.
That's okay. Swing the Strategist LLC. Now, this
swing,
is...
Swing Vote Strategist
LLC. I'm sorry. Swing Vote Strategist LLC. Okay, let's give them their proper title there.
They were paid out of the Joint Fundraising Committee account, $12,000 for fundraising consulting. To the same address that Angela McCardle's used for another organization.
For the Rescue the West organization.
Actually, for her PAC, which we'll get to in a minute.
Oh, okay.
She got more organizations there, but it was filed in Delaware.
That's a privacy state.
Delaware's very, very difficult to figure out who is incorporated in LLC.
Right.
This is something, someone's trying to hide something, right?
Right.
Fortunately, an attorney was able to get me the incorporation documents through a third-party services that he uses, and was able to see that Austin Padgett, Angela McCardle's domestic partner, they own a house together in Texas,
right,
owned and incorporated that LLC that got the $12,000 payment.
Okay.
That was not disclosed to the committee. Sure, you could say, well, he was doing fundraising, but he was paid by the party prior in another agreement that's controversial. And it just went to his address, his name. Why did they need to form the LLC? Why did they need to incorporate in Delaware? And why not the disclosure? And why form this LLC days before the payment started going out? Seems a little bit like somebody's trying to hide something.
Well, let's put it this way. It's not transparent. That's for damn sure, right? Now, again, and I hate doing this on behalf of the LNC, but let's say I'm playing devil's advocate. Given their screw-ups, administrative screw-ups that they have a history of, like not announcing meetings, not notifying people of certain fiduciary notifications, right? Is it possible that this failure to disclose and whatnot, is it just like first-timers who didn't understand what they need to do, who somehow forgot the filing deadlines, or, you know, because I catch a lot of that, right? Like a lot of these Mises State chairs are like, oh, well, we never notified the entire membership because I forgot, you know, I'm busy. I have a day job. I forgot about this, you know, or I didn't know you had to do it. It's like almost a Seinfeld. Like if I had known that was wrong, I would have never done that type of thing. Do you think it's administrative incompetence, or do you really think there's something, say, more nefarious going on?
I think a combination of both. I think a lot of people are incompetent, and they could also pass on corruption as incompetence when it suits them. I certainly don't find them to be all that competent. They thought they could hide this. They thought they could cover that up. They obviously couldn't. So I don't find it to be, but it's like the dog that's chasing the car. Well, it eventually catches it. What does it do?
Right.
No, I think it's a combination. I think a lot of people on the board, I don't think they're corrupt. I think they will follow what they're told to do, and they think that's their job as board of directors, and it's not. They've got a fiduciary duty, and they could be held accountable to that financially. And that's a pretty serious thing, and they treat it like it's a party, not a political party.
Yeah, like a frat party, so to speak, more than anything else. Jocelyn Jeffries, the lack of transparency and nasty attitudes from LNC members, specifically the chair, when there are important questions, have been suspicious. Yeah, now I will say that even people who are not steeped in politics and not steeped in political machinery, when I say to them, like, does this sound weird to you? And I'll show some of these responses, these tweets, these ex posts that are going back from McCardle, from what many people think is basically her hatchet man, Adrian Malagon. These are not what you would call politically correct. And yes, I'm using that ironically, politically correct responses from people where there's like, go F yourself. You're nothing but a, and then the slur word for a homosexual, or, you know, why don't, you know, you're the R word for mentally incapacitated, you know, whatever, you know, it's not even clever retorts. It's just, let's see how nasty we could get. And again, put you in the mind of a Donald Trump, the way Donald Trump would respond to somebody that he considered to be a political foe. So like this is not professional behavior at the very least. And for years after having candidates show up, you know, in their underwear to do a debate, once the party seems to have gotten rid of that stigma, and you have candidates that come across as serious candidates to represent libertarian ideals, now you've got this machinery, this leadership that, in my opinion, decides to engage doubters and political opponents as if they were 5-year-olds throwing a tantrum in a school play yard. So, talk to me a little bit about that. And did that influence you at all to say, like, hey, there might be something, again, more nefarious going on here?
Well, what they have done with that is they've operated like a cult. That's why people don't typically speak out against them. People on the board don't speak out against them because they don't feel comfortable doing it. They make examples of people who do speak out against them. And I've seen this happen multiple times. They take people who may not have a lot of friends outside the Libertarian Party, and they ostracize them, they shun them, they basically make sure they take all that away from them, they cut them off from their Discord servers or whatever they use to make an example out of them for speaking out against leadership.
Right. That's
a common tactic, and it keeps everyone in line. So what they will do is they will try to bully people. One, it will silence people because people will quit. You know, if they post enough memes throwing you out of a helicopter, maybe you'll just quit. Maybe you won't want the harassment. Maybe you'll leave them alone. It's a tactic. It is somewhat effective. I think it has been effective, and I think it's drawn, you know, half the party out of the party, that type of behavior. People don't want to be associated with it. People don't want to see that. And most of the people don't speak out when they leave. They just leave.
Yeah, and I'm a little bit torn on that, to be honest with you, Jake, because I could see where someone says, this is childish. I don't want to engage with this sort of nonsense. I'm just going to look, you don't want me to be your state chair anymore, you know, because I think, who was it? The state chair in, I forget the gentleman's name, but I think it was in Georgia, the state chair who was formerly Mises, I think. I could have the state wrong. I'm pretty sure it was in Georgia. Basically said, you know, this is not what we were about. And they basically badgered him into quitting. And rather than stand up and say, and at least, even if you're going to end up quitting, at least, you know, try to fight a little bit on the way out, chose to take the high ground and just, it's I'm done, you know? So you're right. I could see where a lot of folks did decide, like, hey, why am I going to engage in, you know, idiotic, childish name calling over Twitter? It seems counterproductive.
It also keeps people on the fence, too. There are certain people that they don't want to get attacked like that.
So right.
They think we can just wait them out, that we don't have to respond to this. We don't have to. But what they do is they end up propping this up.
Yeah.
We do have the power to stop this. We do have the power to expose it. And if we choose not to, well, then it's never going to change.
True. Angela, Minnesota lost an excellent chair. Angela, I have to admit, I'm not as familiar with Minnesota, the details of the dynamics of the Minnesota State affiliate. But, you know, hit me up on Twitter and we'll have you come on the show and you could tell us what's going on in the great state of Minnesota, Angela, vis-a-vis the Libertarian Party. I know there's some rumblings going on there. I'm not as familiar with the details. I have to admit, I apologize for that. Jake, I don't know if you know what's going on there.
I do not know who was the chair of Minnesota, unfortunately.
Okay, fair enough. We'll see if Angela wants to come on the show at a future date. She could talk to us about it. Okay, great. So now, getting back to your fine detective work, swing state strategies, was that it?
The swing vote strategist.
Swing state strategist. I don't know why that sticks in my head. I guess maybe it was a better marketing ploy. Swing state. You know, have some 50s music. I apologize. Okay. Swing vote strategies, LLC. Now, this turns out being, you said you discovered it was an LLC that was incorporated in Delaware, where it has very tough privacy. So for business owners that want to remain anonymous or as much as possible, they go to Delaware, one of the states where you file that way. Turns out through some sleuthing and some help from some compatriots, you were able to determine that this was filed by Austin Padgett. Is that how you pronounce his name? Austin Padgett, who is the partner with Angela. They have a child together. I think they domicile together. In Texas, and you're saying that this LLC was filed a couple of days before a payment went. Is that correct? A couple of days?
Yeah, about a week maybe.
A week or so before it received a $12,000 payment that eventually found its way, correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't want to make any mistakes here, found its way to Angela McCardle's PAC?
So the PAC is something, it just happened to use the same address.
Okay.
PAC is something different. So she also formed a Libertarian Unity PAC, which is best I can tell, just put together one pro-Trump ad, and I'm going to call it that. You can look it up, the Libertarian Unity PAC, a pro-Trump ad right before the election. But it signed up for the Joint Fundraising Committee, so it can also collect money. It gets a small kickback, you know, so they will get maybe 10% of it. So still, you know, maybe a couple grand. It signs up for this. And now the PAC is getting money. The PAC that's promoting Donald Trump is getting money from the Joint Fundraising Committee. Now, there's another question. Angela has decided not to file FEC filings with the PAC. She's been asked to tell us where that money went after it came in. So the money comes in. Does it get distributed back to her or her household? Does it go out for some? We don't know. We may not be talking about a whole lot of money, but a little bit of money here, a little bit of money there, and it all adds up. There's still the things, is this improper to lobby for a joint fundraising committee for an opponent that's ultimately going to bring you benefit? And that's what it keeps coming back to. Whether she personally profited, whether the checks went into her bank account or not, Yes, that would be very bad, but it's still irrelevant to the greater point. It's still unethical. It's still unprincipled and still shouldn't be happening.
And when I hear something like this, even though I am a good libertarian, if we have law enforcement to any degree in this country, is there a role for law enforcement in all this, in your opinion? I know you're not a cop. I know you're not a district attorney, but I'm asking for your opinion. Do you think there's a role for law enforcement? Is this something that gets handled through the Judiciary Committee of the Libertarian Party, which may or may not be compromised by Mises' sympathizers, for lack of a better word? Is it a civil suit that needs to take place? If this is happening, and if this is dodgy, and I use if everywhere along the way in those statements, Jake, what kind of recourse does the LP have, does the membership have, if any?
Well, I'm going to take a step back and just go more in general and not speak about this because I don't know. I'm not an attorney. But I know that in general, libertarian philosophy is you don't have a right to commit fraud. You don't have a right to tell someone one thing and embezzle funds or do anything like that. And that, yes, there would be civil suits. I would hope criminal penalties of some sort for doing something. It does have a victim. There are victims in anything like that. There are misappropriation of fund rules that I would hope that we would continue in a libertarian society. Because that is fraud. That is, there is a victim there. I think you can show that. And it'd be no different than going to the store and, you know,
right,
retail worker robbing the register. You wouldn't let them get away with that, and they shouldn't in these situations either, if that happens.
Yeah, I agree with you. It should be some sort of recourse. Jeremiah talks, Delaware is also where all the Biden family corruption took place. The laptop, the drugs, the business dealings, the guns. The fact that Angie needed to use the same methods is at least ironic. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That is a delicious bit of irony, considering that she was hell-bent on getting rid of Biden for Donald Trump, that she would resort to his home state for secrecy and also some of his methods there. All right, so Jake, let me ask you this. In terms of your investigative work, is there anything ongoing that you'd like to share with us? Are you basically say, hey, I've done my part now? Where do we stand in this sort of like this holy pursuit of yours?
Well, now we've got to look at the state party filings. You know, there's still another LNC member that has money going, you know, from the joint fundraising committee to his PAC that he created that's now sending money over to his nonprofit. That's like it's skirting the law somewhere. Something doesn't seem quite right about that. So that still needs to be looked at. I've looked at it briefly, but there's more in depth. We still need to go through. There's all kinds of transactions, all kinds of companies that look like shell companies that were created by these Kennedy PACs, or not created by the Kennedy PACs. They're created for getting money from the Kennedy PACs. Are there anything related? Sometimes I find out a lot of this stuff is nothing. You know, and I don't want to put out things until I, you know, have solid proof of them. But there's still a lot of stuff in those reports that need to be looked at. A lot of these states that have filed the joint fundraising committees have not filed reports on time, so we cannot see what they've done. And then we have to, I guess, assume that the reports are accurate. That's the other part, too.
Right, right. I mean, the reports themselves could be fraudulent, is what you're saying. Right. So there's also that possibility. Like, we're not accusing anybody of intentionally, but yeah, I get it. I get what you're saying. Okay, great. Well, you know, before we go any further, I just want to say thank you. You know, like I said, I've been following your journey here on X, and you know, I want to say thank you for that. I'm sorry, I'm also being distracted by it. This has stirred up a lot of commentary, Jake. So, Grindhouse, the derivative suit is still on. Yes, it is. But I think we may need another show. Now, I've invited some of the folks in there to come and comment, like Karen and Beth, and they've all said, hey, we can't comment while this is ongoing, which is certainly an understandable legal position. So, you know, I we'll get them on when they feel that it's okay for them to come on and talk. So we'll wait on that. Jake, where do you feel we're heading as a Libertarian Party? Do you think, what is it, in 2026, we'll still have hold on a second. I'm sorry. I'll ask you this, and then I'll get to what I just popped up. In 2026, do you feel Angela McArdle is still going to reign as the chair of the LNC.
No, I think she'll be gone before then.
You think she's going to resign, or you think she'll be voted out?
I think she'll probably resign before then, but I don't know how long this will take. You know, I think at some point the Mises board members will come to their senses enough of them, and they will kick Ouster. Her out.
Okay, fair enough. Nick, I'll comment. Okay, Nick, I'll take you up on your offer, and keep an eye out on your email, Nick. I'll reach out to you, and we'll set something up. Yeah, to be perfectly fair here, Nicholas Sarwark is the chairman who was replaced by Angela McArdle at the LNC, correct? And
that was actually.
I'm sorry. Did I get my timeline mixed up there?
There was a chair in between, actually a couple. There was a chair in between, though, Joe Bishop Henchman, and then Joe Bishop Henchman resigned, and then there was another chair, Whitney Liu, was interim chair.
Okay.
And so it was uncontested. There was a two people, Steve Dosbach and Angela, ran for the chair position.
Okay. Yeah. So I think I had the timeline a little compressed there, but Nick was the. He has been the target of a lot of the ire of let me rephrase that. He's been the target of a lot of the ire of the current LNC, and so it'd be interesting to have a conversation with him, what he sees, and maybe answer some of the stuff that's been thrown out about him. That might be an interesting show. So yeah, Nick, I'll reach out to you on email if you're still listening, and we'll get you on for your comments. Be fair to you on that end. And then certainly also, if this makes its way back to Angela McArdle or any of those folks at the LNC, you're welcome to come on and argue your position here as well. You're perfectly welcome to. But as I've said earlier in the show, they've blocked me on social media. So, I can't get through to them, nor do I have any desire to go out of my way to do so. But I will offer it to them if this gets back to them. You're perfectly welcome to come on here and state your case. Rose. She disagrees with you a little bit there, Jake. She says, I'm not sure about that. The time to oust her is long past, and now all the leadership can do is continue to double down. What do you think about that?
I think there will be some pressure. I think there will be some pressure on them, as particularly as derivative suits go forward, that they may decide that it's advantageous to turn on her. And they will turn on each other. They do that frequently.
Yeah, well, most den of vipers do, as we all know. Now, let me ask you this: I'm not familiar about this, but can members be held personally liable in the civil suit for any damages that may have occurred? Do you know the answer to that?
I'm not an attorney, but I did go to business college, and it's always been my my understanding that if they can pierce the corporate veil and say that basically you're not acting as a corporation, you're not acting as a nonprofit, that you're acting.
Right.
You bank for someone, or you're not following the rules, that yes, you could be held personally liable. There may be some board of directors insurance, but I don't know that that covers, calling people, livestock. And I think with certain restrictions, they would push back and say, no, we're not going to cover this anymore.
Right. Right. So basically you're not falling back, but I'm saying you're saying like, yeah, it might be just like any other type of liability where it comes to incorporation. It's just to corporations or anything. You have to prove piercing that corporate veil, which means like, you were not acting as a business, so you don't get the protections of a business, basically. So that's fair enough. All right. Well, Jake, listen, do you have anything else you want to add before I sign off?
Well,
anything you want to add?
Yeah. Thanks so much for covering this. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah. Hey, and Jake, thank you for coming. I know we've been trying to get a show together for a couple of weeks, and you kept saying, hey, I'll promise I'll come on the show. I just want to make sure I have all my ducks in a row. I don't want to say anything that's not defensible. So I give you credit for being very thorough and for being what I consider, whether you consider or not, good journalism. You followed your leads. You verified them. You have what you think is evidence that helped support your statements and your opinions. So I want to thank you that I think you've done a really good job of journalism here, as well as anything that we might say politically you've done as a favor to the Libertarian Party. So thank you for that, Jake. I really appreciate it. For everyone out there, thank you for joining us on this episode of Free for All. I really appreciated all the folks who tuned in live, who've also asked us all these great questions and your comments. Thank you for doing so. Remember, again, we're on every Thursday night. I always try to have a guest who knows a lot more than I do about libertarianism and Libertarian Party politics. So please join us every Thursday, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Grumblings Media, on any major social media platform, Rumble, X, YouTube, Facebook Live. And also, as I mentioned earlier, we're going to be putting out some series of topical shorts featuring myself and Mike Termott. He's decided to join me for 2025. We'll be producing those clips. I think we're going to call them Liberty Lens, and we'll be putting those out on all our platforms as well. So check those out if you have 10 minutes. We'll typically address one issue, a quick 10, 15-minute hit on each one. It won't be live. It'll be pre-recorded. But look out for that, Liberty Lens. And again, for all your needs, go to grumblingsmedia.com. Jake, once again, thank you so much. Give the folks your X handle so they can follow you on X.
Look at this, Jake D. Porter. Jake D. Porter.
Jake D. Porter. Almost sounds like a biker guy, like you're deporting people, Jake.
I hope not.
I'm trying to be funny. I'm not always successful. But anyway, thanks, Jake. And for everyone out there, thank you for joining us again. And see you again next week. Peace, everyone.